Succession number 9168, reel number 16.
Mr. Amat, reel 16.
Yeah, we were asked to go out on a bit of a stunt with the militia against one of the Wazir tribes that were causing trouble. We're on foot, and there was my officer and a couple of other NCOs of our unit, and we met this force, and the cavalry went out in front and spread out in scouting formation over the hills, followed by the infantry, and we took up the rear with the artillery. And this was a mountain battery, which was conveyed by mule, pack mule, very similar to the ones that we used to use in the First World War, taking guns and ammunition up to the front line. And these were old-fashioned guns that had been, I think they said they were left behind by General Gordon. Not General Gordon, General Roberts, who went from Kabul to Kandahar. Old-fashioned type breech-loading guns carried a 6-pounder shell, and we went along with these and over the hills, not very far, and there was one or two shots of rifle fire in the distance, but then the officer got a message through, and apparently the scouts wanted covering fire for some movement they was going to make, so the guns drew round, and we saw them loading up their quite unique way of, or ancient way of doing it really. They put the projectile in first, then put a wad of gun cotton in, and then a detonator, slammed a beech to and pulled a string, and the gun went off. Quite crude it was, but anyway, we heard the crash of the gun going off, and then heard the shell going out, and eventually saw puffs of smoke in the distance on the distant hills as where these shells were bursting. And quite interesting really, but we never got anywhere near these Wazirs, and eventually we packed up and all went back to camp. Whilst I was there, I learnt to play tennis. The chap I was with, who I was pally with in the orderly room, he was one of the chaps I'd been with in the education classes, and he and one of the other chaps could play tennis, so I used to accompany them out. What we used to do was we'd find a flat piece of ground away from the camp and clear all the stones with the aid of the natives away from an area that we'd paced out to act as a tennis court, and then we'd erect the posts and the nets, and the natives used to act as porters and carry tarpaulins out and knock poles in the ground at either end to stop the balls. And we used to go through all this paraphernalia just to have a game of tennis for an hour or so. But then it was quite absorbing. I got quite taken up with it. Another thing I did while I was at Dardoni, this was, talking about sport, is I learnt to play quoits. That's the ancient game that's played in the north of England, around Newcastle, where you throw 4-pound iron rings onto a hob 21 yards away. And that was another sport I used to take up. Anyway, getting back to this parishioner, one day unit orders came through, and I noticed that I'd passed my education examination amongst all the other people, barring one, and He was my new section sergeant that had taken over. A chap came out from India, and he passed three subjects, but failed on one. We were allowed to do that, but on condition you took the next subject later on in the year. Anyway, it's just by the way. While I was in Pochinar, we were under canvas, as I say, and you had an officer there, one I mentioned before, a Lieutenant Crouch, and he was given a lecture one day on tactics, gunnery and tactics, and I was one of the class who included to sit down and listen. Anyway, I disagreed with what he said, and I stood up and said that I disagreed with him, and so he asked me why, and I said, told him why, and he said, right, you come out, here's the chalk, you take charge. So I had to carry out my theory and in front of the class, which was rather absorbing, really, because to challenge an officer like that on his duties was unheard of. Anyway, eventually he said, report to me at the office after parade today. So after parade I went and reported to him, and he got rather angry, like he did before when I refused to drive the T-Ford back, and threatened me with all sorts of consequences. But eventually he told me to clear off, and I went, and no further action was taken. But after a few days within the camp, I was sent for by the OC, and he said he was going to send me on a course. And before then, I've got to go back to Peshawar and have further instruction in Vickers machine gun, which I did. I got back there and spent several days with a sergeant of one of the other sections who'd happened to be in Peshawar at the time, and he used to take me every day on. He'd already been on this course down south at the tank headquarters, and he instructed me on the Vickers machine gun, and also helped me to understand why I've got to instruct other people as well, and also the tactics of armoured cars in battle and all that sort of thing. Eventually I got posted to Armanagar, the tank corps school, which was set up right down south below Bombay in an area which was unique in India, and that is that you didn't need any punkers or any fans. The temperature was even all the year round, between 70 and 80 degrees. And although you got rain at certain times, you didn't need, never got cold like it did up in Peshawar during the winter when you had to have fires on. So it was rather an ideal, from the weather point of view, ideal situation. I went down with a chap called an Irishman, Lance Corporal Kennedy. I was still only a Lance Corporal, and we went, reported to this Armanagar with a school, and we had to undergo tests, first of all, before they'd accept us as students. And we passed these all right, and eventually settled down, and these courses lasted several months, and were rather beneficial, really, because in the old days it was a sort of... nobody really knew how to use armoured vehicles in battle, and it was only by trial and error they found out, and that's why this school was brought about. And there was a major who was a commandant there, and I remember we every day we had to get on parade and divide it into sections with an instructor. Oh, it was six of us in each class, and there was an instructor, and the instructor was either a senior sergeant or a sergeant major, And one of the instructors I had to remember was the RSM. And he was called Major Sutherland, that was his name. He was a Scotsman from the Scots Guards. Big, tall fella. And he's quite a good instructor. And we used to sit round under the veranda during the morning and with a machine gun there, and he'd give us instruction, and then call us out one at a time to take over his job and try and instruct the others and carry on like that. So you learnt how to instruct. And the thing about him I remember is there was a commodity on the market in those days, for soldering metals, and it was called fluxite. And what the troops used to do, they called this Sergeant Major Fluxite, and if you ask them why, they say, because it simplifies soldering. And that's what he was. He used to be one of these chaps who used to simplify the art of soldering, not soldering, as the advert said. Anyway, that's by the way. But whilst we were there, they had a large room here in one of the bungalows, and in there was a model laid out in the form of a part of the Indian countryside, like the frontier would be up where I had been, with the hills and the valleys and all the points of interest that one would pick out in doing any map reading. And there you were given a paper as you went in the door, and on there was a project where it was assumed that an enemy was going to attack, and you had to work out with the aid of this model, a little model of cars, armoured cars and cavalry units and infantry, of how you would place your force to defend a certain pass or attack a certain pass and all that sort of thing. Very interesting really, but anyway, this Lance Corporal and I were the only two Lance Corporals. Everybody else was either a sergeant or a senior corporal. Anyway, we picked up the gen of all this and got on quite well. One thing about this particular place, talking about the climate, was the fact that these bungalows were more modern built, wood brick bungalows with stone floors. And there was two-tiered. There were a ground floor on the first floor, all concrete stone floors, stone steps, and but the roof was a kind of thatched roof with open rafters and beams, and you had iron bedsteads with poles at each corner of the bedpost on which you hung this latest style of mosquito net. Was a sort of squared net that you got under and pulled down either side, so you were in a cocooned into a mosquito free area. But you used to get really hot and very stuffy during the night, so very often you used to pull the side up, and of course that was deadly, because once the mosquitoes got in there and stung you, very often you used to get malaria. But another thing about this is the fact that there was bugs. These bungalows were infested with bugs, not the type that normally one would associate with this country used to suffer with during the Victorian age, but these were a special tropical type of bug, and they used to drop from this thatched roof onto our mosquito nets at the top. And before we went to bed every night, by the way, each one of our legs of our beds was stood in a disused tobacco tin that was half filled with creosote, because this stopped any crawling creatures from coming up and getting into our beds. And every night before we used to go to sleep, we used to have a general clearance at the top of our mosquito nets. We'd go around with a tin with some of this creosote in it and a stick, and we'd sweep these bugs from the top of our mosquito net into these tins to be disposed of. That's one by the way. Anyway, the I've got on quite well with the instructing, and we went out several times on manoeuvres to aid us in sort of the field work of tank gunnery and tactics, which we were supposed to be being taught. And I remember once I went out there and I went in the lecture room once, and the OC there, the major, he had a queer way of going about things, but rather disconcerting, because as you sat down and he got up and gave a lecture, which he used to do now and again from time to time, and there was probably about 50 or 60 of us NCOs in the class, in the classes, and he'd start off with some theme, and then he'd stop, he'd ask a question, then he'd stop and say, Sergeant so-and-so, and whoever was called up, stand up and give the answer to whatever question he had. I remember one day he must have got hold of the fact that I'd passed my first class education certificate, and he came to a word and he said, what does that mean? And he looked in his little black book and he, Lance Corporal Amet. So I had to stand up and give him what I thought was the definition of this word. Anyway, it went on like that, and one day we used to go out, as I say, several times and do these manoeuvres, and what used to happen was that you'd get two or three sheets of false cap sheets all typed out with the idea that an enemy was going to attack a certain part, as I said before. And so that by the time you'd got out there, you'd read all this and got all the gen on what was going to happen, then the local military used to be called in to aid in the school as to be used as sort of puppets to be moved about. And there was a troop of Indian cavalry, a troop of half battery of artillery, and a company of infantry, and these were assembled at a certain point in the countryside, which was similar to the one we'd seen on in the lecture room, and with the aid of these typescript copy we had in our hand, we were supposed to be able to tell what was going to happen. And whoever's the OC used to call on one of the officers perhaps and say, right, Lieutenant so-and-so, you're in charge. You've got a mixed force, and you're in charge of an advance guard. You've got cavalry, infantry, artillery, armoured units. What are you going to do? How are you going to place them? And he had to take charge, and he was allowed 10 minutes or 15 minutes. And by that time, he'd have to give his orders and find out how far the enemy advanced and all the rest of it. And he come to one day, and I was rather surprised he called upon me. And rather disconcerting, because I had to get out and under this tree where there was a table and a chair, and I'd sit down. I was supposed to be the brigade commander. And I had to give me orders, and the motorcycle dispatch riders used to come up, and I had to tell them what message to take to what unit and where I was going to place it and all the rest of it. Anyway, I managed to grope through it. I don't know how I stood, but eventually afterwards I got quite a good acclamation about it. That was one of the things we did. But anyway, this corporal and I must have been there about 4 months all told, this course, and we eventually passed that. We had to go through a situation where there was about six or eight machine guns lined up against a trench which was about 100 yards away, and on that trench was targets, and you had to pass from one gun to the next, and each gun was set up with a stoppage, that it, and you were allowed a certain time, and the first gun you come to might be, there was four stoppages that were noted, plus other ones which you had to sort of remember to how to correct, and you were, when you got to the first one, there was one of the instructors there, and the gun was at all angles, and you had to square it up and line it up with the target, and because when you pressed the trigger, you found that there was a stoppage, so you had to correct it, load up, and fire around at the target, and you went from one to the other, all the way along the line, and you were timed, and you had to do it in a certain number of seconds, and I know I just managed to scrape through. The only thing I did wrong was I was so intent on getting through quick, instead of lining up the foresight with the V of the back sight, I lined up one of the horns protecting the foresight. Anyway, they generously gave me the benefit of the doubt, and we got through that, and when we got back to Peshawar, we had to go in front of the OC the day after we got back, and he complimented us on passing the course and all that. And I was then noted as an instructor. I was still only a Lance Corporal. Anyway, I still took charge of the section, and anyway, just before Christmas 1945, when we was going into Christmas dinner, and the officers and NCOs were, officers and sergeants were waiting on us at the table, the order sergeant came in and read orders, and on there I was promoted. I was promoted corporal, backdated for 14 months. And that meant I got quite a bit of pay to come, so it was very pleasing for me. Anyway, got to 1925, and then the unit was shifted from Peshawar down to Lahore, which was much nearer the centre of India than we were up and on the frontier. And this was a wonderful camp, really. It was really modernised. The buildings were made of brick, and there was adequate the toilets and shower bars and all sorts of facilities which we'd never envisioned before at all. There was a vast canteen area, and at the top of the canteen area was the corporal's mess that we were allotted in those days. And then there was the sergeant's mess, which was another building away from the main blocks. And all the barrack rooms were got adequate verandas and, well, plenty of the water was all piped on and everything right to hand, probably modernised place it was. There's one point about it is that you used to get, we're in the range of the rainy season, so as we're near the western side of India, well, nearer than we had been before, we used to get the rainy season used to hit us very hard. And in September every year, I know the natives just come round and make sure that the storm ditches, which were about 6 feet deep and about 8 feet wide, all round these cantonments, were made free so that when the rain came, it cleared away. I know it was very hot, though, at Lahore. I remember the guard room was situated just off the main road, so that any official coming along there, the guard had to turn out. And I remember there's one brigadier who's come along there, and he was always complaining that the guard never turned out. Well, because he was in a fast car that used to come along about 40 or 50 miles an hour. By the time the sentry had seen it in the distance, the guard hardly had time to get out there. But anyway, that was one of the things that appeared. Another thing was, during the rainy season, I remember I was on guard several times there, or in charge of a guard. And when it got to the evening, the used to have flower beds dipped out of the lawns, which was all the way round. And these flower beds, as they were lower than the lawn, used to fill up with water. At night time, you see all round the edges of one of these beds, you see about a dozen frogs all croaking. Quite a sight, really. Another thing about this was that nearly all the men, or most of the men, had a pet dog they used to keep. And I remember the one of the officers had a pug-shaped dog, like a bulldog, and he used to tether him up in a tree outside the orderly room every morning. Well, another thing, what I was going to mention, was the fact that some of our chaps had got tame monkeys. They were one of those small type of monkey that used to see with organ grinders. But anyway, one of our chaps had one of these monkeys, and he used to have a collar around it and a lead, but sometimes he used to break out of his bunk he was kept in, and he'd tease this dog. I remember sometimes when I was on guard, he used to watch these, and the monkey used to drop down from the tree and pull the dog's tail and then run up the tree again, and the dog used to go really wild trying to chase him. That's just one of the things, anyway. But by the way, I played the hockey a lot while I was there at the Hoare. And one day we were out on the field, just starting a match some distance away from camp. And we saw a cloud in the distance and wondered what it was. And before we knew where we were, a cloud of locusts had settled all the way, and as we run back to our quarters, we were covered in these brown looking individuals that were about 2 inches long, but they were quite harmless, and although it was frightening, by the time we got back, we were covered in these, and we had to brush them all off before we got in and had a shower. Talking about them, it reminds me that whilst I was in Iraq at Mosul, we used to have gardens around our camp there, and we used to grow our own vegetables. Quite extensive they were, and one morning we woke up and we found that locusts had been there overnight, and they'd absolutely ate everything